What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 49 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your weekly source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. As always, I'm your host, Luke Lewis, this week joined by the crafty kid of Animal Crossing, Claire Helmberger.
How's it going, Luke?
It's going good. How are you?
I'm doing good, too.
It's been a hot minute since we have posted an episode recording, so as of listening to this, you've probably just enjoyed a nice 4th of July holiday weekend. But we are posting two episodes. We have our E3 reactions with Joseph Hooper and Jacob McCourt, as well as this episode where we are reviewing Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. I just want to apologize for the delay. We were in the middle of a move coming off of our vacation, so a lot going on, lots of moving pieces, and we also both are still working full-time, so bear with us. I think now officially we're back to our week-to-week schedule. We shouldn't miss an episode. And next week, we have our very special anniversary episode.
Yeah.
Celebrating 50 episodes of our podcast.
That's going to be really fun.
All right. Shall we get right into things today? And yeah, I think it'll be really fun, too. Sorry to, like, weirdly segue out of it.
But zigzag.
Segue. Really smooth. Professional podcasting here. Yes. You know what I mean?
It's
just the utmost professionalism here. Excellent. Well, let's get right into things with our title before we get into our title track, let's jump into We've Got the News, our weekly news segment where we break down what's going on in the video game industry. This week, since we're focusing on Ratchet and Clank, I thought it would be appropriate to discuss some other PlayStation-centric news with the recent Sony acquisitions that happened this week. So as of recording this, we're recording this on July 3rd, so a lot went down this week with Sony, but it all kicked off when Sony announced that they had acquired Finnish developer Housemarque. So this story comes to us from Joe Screbbles and Matt Perslow over at IGN. Sony has acquired Finnish developer Housemarque after years of collaboration between the two companies. Housemarque recently released the PS5 exclusive Returnal. Then this plot was thickened when Sony announced they had acquired, I believe it's pronounced Nexus, a PC porting specialist. So Sony has acquired Nexus, a Dutch studio that specializes in porting games to PC. Announced by head of PlayStation Studios, Herman Holst, Nexus has been brought on for an undisclosed fee. The studio will provide high-quality in-house technical and development capabilities for PlayStation Studios, according to the press release. Nexus has worked extensively with Crystal Dynamics, Eidos Montreal, and IO Interactive since forming in 1999, porting the recent Tomb Raider trilogy and the two most recent Deus Ex games to PC. While no specifics have been given about Nexus's work for PlayStation, it feels likely that the studio will support Sony's increased focus on porting its console-exclusive games to PC. Then, the plot thickens once again, where it feels likely that we may see a third studio acquisition announced soon, after Sony Japan seemed to leak that it would also acquire Bluepoint Studio, who was responsible for the remake of Demon's Souls recently and Shadow of the Colossus on PS4.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot going on. Sony's making moves. What did you make of this, Claire?
Well, I wasn't particularly surprised by the news about Housemarque.
That one felt like it had been coming for years. We were discussing last night before recording the podcast that the first game I believe they made together, PlayStation and Housemarque, was 2007 with Super Stardust HD, and they've just been working together ever since, and I don't think a game has come out not as a PlayStation exclusive from that studio.
Right. So
that speaks a lot to their, I think, working relationship that's pretty established at this point.
Mm-hmm. It felt kind of like a given almost when it was announced. I'm really intrigued by the acquisition of the PC porting studio, the Nexus studio. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that one is an interesting one. I didn't necessarily see that coming, but it makes sense in the recent moves. We've seen Horizon come to PC. We've seen Death Stranding come to PC. We've seen now Days Gone recently release on PC. And it seems like they want to expand their player base in a way that allows more people to play their exclusive games, especially at a time when it is hard to find PlayStation 5s.
Right.
Granted, those are PlayStation 4 titles, but still that mindset, I feel like, is kind of there. And I don't know. It's an interesting move. It kind of doesn't go along with the rest of the business model of Sony, as opposed to like a Microsoft right now, where they're creating this ecosystem surrounding Game Pass and xCloud, where play their games anywhere, access to all these different games. You get Game Pass, you get access to all of their games. Like, Sony is not doing that. They're still selling all of their games a la carte, but this is kind of like a middle ground between that of, like, if you don't have a PlayStation console, you could still play some of these exclusive games. And you also have to keep in mind, because I've seen a lot of fanboys being, like, angry about the games coming to PC, but I ultimately feel like, one, it's just good for people to be able to play all the games. Right. Like, that's not a bad thing. And years after these games are coming out, why not?
Right.
Why not expand the player base? Why not get people excited about a potential sequel? Now that Horizon Forbidden West is coming out, a PC player might feel more compelled to buy a PlayStation to play the sequel after really enjoying playing the first one on PC. Things like that. Yeah. I don't know. I just think it's smart business moves, and they might as well. And it sounds like Nexus is a really good studio to do that for them, having put out some pretty comparable PC ports recently.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a smart move.
I do want to talk about Bluepoint, which was kind of hinted at in the article because there was this leaked tweet that, you know, the iconic, like, PlayStation Studios graphic that they've started to use this console generation with all of their exclusive studios and, like, an image of that franchise that's most known for that studio. So they did one of those, but on the day that they announced Housemarque, instead of including a Returnal image, they included a Demon's Souls image. So everyone was like, oh wait, they're congratulating Bluepoint. Is Sony going to acquire Bluepoint? Which would make a ton of sense considering Demon's Souls was a launch title. Shadow of the Colossus remake did incredibly well for them. I believe that came out in 2019. Or maybe it was even earlier than that. But regardless.
I don't recall.
It's okay. But I just think that's an incredibly talented studio. I would love to see that studio specifically make original IPs because they've done such amazing things with these remakes.
Yeah.
Especially Demon's Souls on PS5. Like, it's stunning. It runs incredibly well. And it's a really cool, innovative kind of reimagining of the original. So I'm, like, waiting for that one. That's the one that would be, like, a big pop for me. Yeah. Like, Housemarque I was really excited about, but it doesn't necessarily feel like it changes the game for that studio at all. Like, Returnal was amazing, and now I'm glad that they'll have first-party resources and access and representation, and, like, their games will be showcased in such a way going forward that, like, they can be center stage at an E3 equivalent press conference, you know what I mean? But Bluepoint, I feel like, is kind of lurking in the shadows, in a sense. Like, it's a popular studio, but, like, they could be a world-class recognized name, and I'd like to see them have access to that same resources.
Yeah, so
it's
definitely.
It's exciting stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
How do you think long-term PlayStation will be affected by the business model that they're choosing in terms of, like, I don't like to get into console wars in terms of, like, one system's better than the other, but I definitely think every console generation has a clear winner in terms of, like, you really advocated to what the fans wanted and you were, like, reactive and adapted in interesting ways. Like, for example, the 360 generation, I felt like Microsoft definitely won over the PS3, not just in sales, but in their online infrastructure and their way to integrate Xbox Live Arcade early on. Like, they just were forward thinking in a way that I don't think PlayStation was at the time. Or, for example, PS4, like, I think Sony was ahead of the game on that one because of their focus on games and quality titles and first-party titles and the cheaper price point at the time and not requiring internet access, which was early on a plan for Microsoft. Like, they were just very receptive and reactive in really interesting ways. And then in I would say in this PS5, Xbox Series X world, it's kind of unclear because they're taking such different strategies. But who, I guess, is playing the more interesting game to you right now between Microsoft and PlayStation?
I think it kind of comes down to Microsoft is, like you said, creating an ecosystem. So I think when you look at who's winning PlayStation or Xbox, you get kind of a different conversation than who's winning Sony versus Microsoft. And I think they're just kind of playing to different demographics, different groups of people, different markets. I think that the Microsoft ecosystem that they're building is a really great thing for people who like to try out lots of different games or have the option, you know, with Game Pass to, you know, try different games and explore lots of games without, you know, committing to the very expensive purchases of a single game. But then you have, like, when we were first staring down the barrel of the console launches, like 9 or 10 months ago, we saw, we were talking about how it was incredible how Sony had all of these games lined up for the first year or two, even with COVID, of the console launch that we just wanted to play so bad that you had to have the system to play them.
Right.
And Xbox didn't have any games where it's like, well, like, I have to buy the system so I can play this game, that were coming out at launch.
Right.
So I think they're just, they're playing such different games that it's hard to say who's a winner or loser at this point. And I think it's really just gonna, I think they're kind of going their separate ways almost in terms of their strategies. What do you think? Yeah.
I definitely agree, but I think there is an argument to be made that I think in 10, 20 years, the generation or the system that we will look back on and the company that we will look back on is Microsoft, because I think they're changing the ecosystem of games as a whole.
Yeah.
I think the way games are distributed, I think Netflix and streaming platforms really reinvented the way that people consume movies and TV.
Right.
And I think Game Pass is going to do that ultimately for games, because we're going to hit a breaking point where, as an average Joe consumer, not someone like us that wants to play every game from every publisher, average Joe isn't going to want to pay $70 for a game when they could get Game Pass and play dozens of different titles.
Or, as we discussed in our E3 episode with Jacob McCourt, saying in Canada it's like over $100.
Right, which blew my mind, because that's a huge amount of money. That's one-fifth the cost of buying the system itself.
Yeah, like, it's a huge commitment.
And it, even if there aren't a crazy number of exclusives on PS5 that we're picking up week to week, but $70 is still a lot of money for one title when that could buy 6 months of Game Pass.
Right.
And I kept referencing this on the E3 podcast too, but like, if I were a parent, because we watched the Xbox conference with my parents, and if I were a parent, it would be such a compelling argument to get my kid an Xbox and Game Pass. Right. Because it's the gift that keeps on giving. They'll always have a new game, and there doesn't have to be a hard conversation of, oh, we can't get that game right now, we gotta wait for your birthday, or wait for a special occasion, or X, Y, or Z. Like, no, you can download it right away.
Right, and they've also integrated it so well with the PC
ecosystem. Sure, too. And xCloud, like, you don't even need an Xbox itself anymore to be able to do it. You just need a controller.
Right.
Well, technically, you don't even need that, because you can play shit with touchscreen, but I digress. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so that's what I kind of look at these ecosystems, and you brought up an interesting point when we were talking about this last night, that there has been this conversation surrounding these studio acquisitions that PlayStation is in kind of an arms race with Microsoft, in a sense that, and this was also from an IGN article by Matt Perslow, they're in an arms race with Xbox as Xbox is acquiring all these studios, but it just, I don't know. I don't really agree with that, in a sense that these deals happen so far in advance.
Right.
You know, that Microsoft had acquired so many studios at the end of the Xbox One generation, and now we're starting to finally see the fruits of those acquisitions, and we're starting to see the announcements of those games. Like, their E3 conference was a big kind of showcase of that. And PlayStation, these studios that they're announcing, they've had working relationships with for years. And so I just don't know if they're being as reactionary to each other as maybe it appears so.
Right. Like, it's, I don't think that Sony acquired Housemarque because of how well the Microsoft Games Fest went.
No. I think they did because they saw how well Returnal sold and reviewed.
Right.
Because their games have always been well-regarded, but Returnal, they kind of showcased how much they're capable of.
Yeah.
And I think Sony saw that, like, oh, wow, as a second party, they did an incredible amount of, they achieved an incredible amount of technical fidelity and gameplay finesse, and if we throw even more money at this, it can be something truly special and a part of this.
Yeah.
The PlayStation ecosystem, so that seemed to like an easy slam dunk to me.
Right.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see as it goes on, and I'm curious to see if that Blue Point acquisition is legit. I have a feeling it is. It's just a matter of when we see it. I saw Joseph Hooper tweet after some of these announcements were made after our podcast recording. It's interesting that this is all coming out like shortly after E3, because a lot of these announcements would have been cool around a PlayStation press conference. We got the Ghost of Tsushima director's cut information. We're getting a lot of PlayStation news right now, and it's like, huh, this would have been
a cool press conference.
Right, like they could have done something with this, but I digress. They're, like you said, they're just playing drastically different games right now. And
yeah.
Right on. Anything else to add on PlayStation acquisitions and not?
I think we've hit on everything that's on my mind currently. How about
Cool. You're... Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Let's get into our title track, main topic this week. We are reviewing Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, which was one of my most anticipated games going into this year. And while I haven't finished it, I'm pretty far, and it is exceeding every expectation. I think it's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been having so much fun. It's just a joy to play. I've heard a lot of people echo that sentiment on the internet, but like it's really true. Like Insomniac just knows how to make fun video games, which is what I love to play.
For sure. It's really fun. I have played a bit of it too, not nearly as much as you though, and I've been meaning to get back to it, but this week has just been
really busy, crazy. But so. I'm glad you got to check it out a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
I know we were going to kind of flip the script here and you were going to interview me a little bit about my time, but before we do that, I want to get your like quick top level impressions based on what you played in the like opening level or two.
Yeah, I think I played the opening level, and I don't think I got much farther than that.
That's fine.
But I can't remember because I watched you play a fair bit after that.
Sure, yeah.
They kind of blur together. But
just tell me what you thought.
I remember being completely wowed by every aspect of like the way it looked, the way it felt, how satisfying the gameplay felt in the moment, the haptic feedback, everything. So I can't wait to get back into it. I'm probably going to change the haptic feedback settings because I found the shooting to be a little bit challenging
with
the adaptive triggers and my past wrist injury.
So for listeners that haven't played, it's a very heavily action-based platforming title in the long-running Ratchet and Clank series, but they've utilized the adaptive triggers on the PS5 to feel different depending on what weapon you're using and increase the tension depending on what weapon you're using. So for certain weapons, it can be actively harder to press the trigger, and that's intentional to create kind of that level of immersion and things like that, but it can be
a bit
taxing.
Yeah.
I kind of like it because I just like the variety of it, and as I'm jumping between weapons, it feels really cool to
have that
different sensations and things like that, but I could totally see how it could be not a turnoff, but like it can make it more difficult.
Yeah, I'm glad it has the option to adjust the settings for sure for people who have a harder time pulling that trigger repetitively.
Definitely.
So yeah, I just can't wait to keep going with it. But I want to hear from you some more specific things since you have played more of the game. So why don't you start with your overall impressions of the game so far?
For sure. So I've been a big fan of the Ratchet and Clank series for a long time. I have played a lot of different entries in the series. I haven't played a ton of them to like 100% completion, which wasn't because I wasn't enjoying it. It was just, you know, matter of like when you're a kid, you jump around to a lot of different games and play a lot of different things. But I specifically remember really, really loving the PSP Ratchet and Clank Size Matters, which was one of the first handheld experiences that I had where I was like, wow, this looks amazing. I had just got my PSP for my birthday. It came with Ratchet and Clank Size Matters, and I remember showing my parents, and we were like really impressed by the graphics and the color and just the way the screen popped after having, you know, a Game Boy or even the early Nintendo DSs. Like,
yeah,
this the PSP was a big jump graphically, and it was really cool to see. That led into me really loving the PS3 games, Tools of Destruction and A Crack in Time. I think at the time, those games graphically were really incredible, and A Crack in Time especially had really clever puzzle-solving mechanics,
mm-hmm.
where you controlled Clank and you manipulated time to solve these different puzzles to move on to new areas. And I've just always loved this series for its wit and its charm and just its really awesome Saturday morning cartoon vibe, and how it just always felt like it threw you right into the action.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rift Apart continues all of that to the next level. It turns it up to 11. I think in terms of innovation, I don't know if this is like a hugely innovative game that we're going to like remember for how much it changed the action platformer.
Uh-huh.
But it does it so, so, so well that I think it's one of the best I've ever played within that genre space.
Mm-hmm.
The gameplay is just incredibly smooth, whether you're shooting or you're platforming. And the way it utilizes key features, the PS5, like haptic feedback and the adaptive triggers, I think just add a next level of immersion. As you're running, you feel the vibration on your feet.
That was
you
really
feel
cool.
The rainfall. You feel there's, with the level of graphical fidelity they can achieve, the different like particles of the weapons and things. And we saw a bit of this in Returnal too, but just the amount of color and pixels they can show on screen,
right,
in such a fast-paced action setting is so, so cool. And graphically, the cutscenes look like a Pixar movie. Like, it's so pretty to look at. And when you were watching me first play it, I was like, oh my gosh, look at Ratchet's fur.
Yeah.
Like, you can just see the textures, or like the level of ray tracing when you see Clank and the shine on his like armor, not armor, but like his body, you know,
right.
What I mean? And you see the reflection, like little details like that are just incredible. And it's also really funny. Like, I haven't gotten into the writing much, but it continues that sense of wit, and it keeps it really interesting by introducing some new characters to the fray and some new playable characters. Without spoiling, because this has been kind of a key part of the marketing, you play as Ratchet, but then at one point, Clank gets separated from Ratchet, and then you meet Rivet, who is also a Lombax, which is the same alien species that Ratchet is, and the Lombaxes have been like long lost, extinct, and so for it's this like pivotal moment in the series for Ratchet to see Rivet and to see their relationship that develop and things like that. And when I say relationship develop, I just mean like their character arcs. I'm not saying anything happened, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like it's just really cool, and it's definitely like, for fans of PlayStation, they also have some really cool little nods to other PlayStation franchises. And there's even references to Sunset Overdrive, which was Insomniac's Xbox game that I really loved. But just to see the nods and the little tongue-in-cheek winks is really fun. But like I said, the writing is just really, really funny. It puts a smile on my face. And the pace of the game really moves in an impressive way that there's really never a moment of downtime unless you want to explore. You go to various planets throughout the game, and they're semi-open world. I say semi just because they're not, like, gigantic areas to explore, but you can run around planet areas. There's different vehicles and things like that that you can use to traverse that are really fun.
Very cool.
And you're finding different secrets and collectibles, as is typical for this series, but it's super fun, and I love going through the environments and finding more secrets and meeting quirky characters in the world that give you little missions to go run and do. But if you're not interested in that, you can really mainline the story and just keep going and beat it rather quickly. But I'm kind of taking my time just because I'm having so much fun in the game.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like there's a lot of exploration to do within the levels.
Yeah, there's a fair bit. Like I said, it's mostly focused around the collectibles and whatnot, and these little, I don't want to call them fetch quests because I think the writing is better than that, but you know what I mean, where you're going to collect items to help a character in the world and things like that. Like, they're well written fetch quests, but some of them are kind of that style of game. But what they have you doing to fetch the items, I would say, is very clever and fun and engaging. So don't get like turned off by that.
Right on. What do you think about the, what is your impression of the various gameplay systems at play? Like the upgrade system and the weapons and ease of use?
So this game continues the pretty standard upgrade path that Ratchet and Clank has had, where you level up your weapons to level 5, but then you also have this crazy skill tree for every weapon. And as the inventor of the weapon wheel, Ratchet and Clank has just a crazy, insane amount of weapons. And I love the variety, and I love kind of finding which ones I like.
Mm-hmm.
There's silly ones, like there's a bomb that makes a garden spawn, and then the enemies freeze in place from the sprinkler water that spawns with this garden bomb. There's different pistols. There's a shotgun called the Enforcer that like sends like electrical bolts. There's this gun called the Ricochet where you shoot it and then it bounces off enemies back and forth, causing damage between the two enemies. There's this other gun called Mr. Fungi where you throw it and it's this like mushroom turret. Like, there's just wild stuff, and I haven't even like scratched the surface of all the weapons in the game, but it's really fun after you level it up, because then you have all these skill points that you can use to invest in the skill trees of each given weapon, and you can upgrade ammo capacity, you can upgrade like range of fire, you can upgrade you'll get like special perks where like this effect will happen when an enemy is shot with this weapon, or the area of damage of this grenade weapon will increase, and things like that that like don't sound like crazy innovative, but they drastically change the gameplay. Like, if you have a gun that now you've suddenly tripled the area of damage, and you have a crowd of aliens coming at you, enemies that you need to take out, like, it gets so hectic and cool, but it's so fast-paced and fun. And then in terms of the gameplay systems, they've added a dash mechanic, which is new to the Ratchet and Clank series, that, one, visually looks so cool every time he does it, and Rivet does it. It just looks so cool, but it definitely adds a layer of complexity to combat. It kind of reminds me of Doom Eternal, in that you're constantly moving as these enemies are coming for you, or a boss is coming for you. You're constantly moving, and you're firing, and you're running around, and it just keeps it really interesting, and it always keeps the energy and the pace up, which, like I said, that's why I feel like there's really no moment of downtime, because you're either, like, in this high-intensity, awesome action, or you're experiencing, like, a stunning cutscene that then immediately transitions into gameplay, and you're immediately back into the game.
Very cool. Do you have anything more to say about the traversal within the game, the platforming?
Yeah, I think the platforming is really solid, as always. It uses, you know, classics of double jumps and wall running and hovering, and you're swinging on things, and I don't want to get into specific, like, spoilers of, like, story moments, but there are some really cool things where you encounter, like, creatures and things where you're riding creatures and doing different things through environments, and, like, cinematically, it's really fun and really cool, and once again, really fast and energized, and it's really awesome.
That's awesome. That sounds really cool. Do you have anything else to say about the graphics and the look of it, or have you kind of...
I mean, I'll just keep beating my drum that it's really, really pretty, and the photo mode is another stunner. I remember Spider-Man on PS4 was one of my favorite photo modes, and so was Miles Morales on PS5, but this game continues that. There was this great scene the other night when I was playing where you're playing as Rivet, and you go into this planet that has kind of a Mos Eisley cantina feel, like you're at this like kind of seedy underbelly bar, and there you turn and there's like a bucking bronco machine that these aliens are riding and making bets on, and there's this, they're watching like an arena fight on the TV, or they're playing a Ratchet and Clank arcade game in the corner, and little details like that. And then you go up to the bar, and there's this stunning color palette, and the way the light's reflecting makes it look kind of damp and seedy, but there's this colorful cast of aliens sitting around the bar, and I took a picture of it with my photo mode, because I was like, oh, I want to remember this, because this is like a really cool, just like, it wasn't like, oh, this is a cutscene, it wants me to look at this. It was just like, this is the world that they've built, and it kind of, it just made it all feel really interesting and really built out the world and really made me care about seeing what was going on with these different citizens of the galaxy, so to speak.
That's really cool. That sounds awesome. So how do you think this game uses the technology of the PS5?
I think on a technical level, it's probably the best representation of why we need next-gen PlayStation that we've seen so far in terms of the Sony first-party exclusives, especially. From a technical level, the ray tracing, the quick load times, the haptic feedback, they utilize every like key feature of the PS5 in such a masterful way that, like I said, this is a showcase of why you need a PS5. The big gameplay hook that they showed off in demos and trailers going into the game, where Ratchet or Rivet go through rifts in time and are transported to different dimensions, are really visually stunning, and I don't think would be possible if not for the PS5 technology being able to quick change between environments. And there's amazing moments in gameplay where you're in one dimension and then say you're falling through the sky and you go through a rift into a new dimension, and then suddenly a boss fight that was in a major metropolitan city rooftop transitions and you're in a prehistoric jungle and then transitions back. And these transitions happen very kind of cinematically. You're not, like, actively choosing to go to that area. You're, you know, doing kind of a quick time button press, and then you're getting jettisoned in. But, it happens so instantaneously that it does feel like you're controlling that in that sense. And it visually is really impressive, but then it just, once again, keeps that pace of gameplay of, like, oh, your environment can change at any given time and become totally different. And just that, like, always being on your toes in this action platformer is really exciting and keeps it fun.
That's awesome. Any other ways that it kind of showcases the technology of the PS5?
We talked about the haptic feedback and adaptive stuff with the triggers, but that also is another showpiece of, like, this is really cool, where you're using a gun, but it has a different effect if you press the trigger down all the way versus halfway. Or that's like, cool. Like for the shotgun or for the grenade launcher type weapons, you're doing like a half fire versus a full fire, and like kind of strategically planning out those attacks kind of make it feel like a puzzle game. And then that adds that extra level of immersion. I think that covers like the main PS5 features that it's hitting on. The sound is awesome. The music and the score, and just the, you know, range of sound effects from all these wacky weapons are really great. And then I think just it would have been really, really hard and I think impossible to accomplish the level of polish and technical fidelity that they achieved on this game. So that's why I think this one specifically is exclusive to PS5, which will be interesting going forward, because for example, God of War and Horizon are both cross-gen on PS4 as well. And the games are going to be great. I'm not worried about them not being great, but you do look at a game like Ratchet and Clank and you're like, man, I want this level of technical polish on every single PS5 game as possible.
Does that kind of make you wonder if the, specifically like the haptic feedback and adaptive triggers aspect of the gameplay of Ratchet and Clank isn't going to be part of the gameplay of Horizon or God of War because they're cross-gen? Or do you think they'll like have two separate
They'll definitely have streams? It. They'll definitely have it. And they've said they will have it, specifically in Horizon. It'll be interesting to see if it's, because for example, in Miles Morales, an Insomniac game as well, there was haptic feedback, but not to the point where it felt crazy, innovative, drastically different experience than what people probably experienced on the PS4 version. I say that because I only played the PS5 version. That being said, Ratchet and Clank feels like it would be an entirely different experience if you turned off those haptic feedback and adaptive trigger functions. Just in terms of, like, immersion, it would still be a very enjoyable experience And I'm glad from an accessibility standpoint that they offer the option to turn right. those things off. But for a game like Horizon, like, I want to be able to feel that bowstring right. on yeah. the adaptive triggers. I want to feel the haptic feedback as Aloy's swimming through the water. Like, I know those functions will be there. It's just, like, to what extent will those SKUs feel different?
Mm-hmm.
We kind of can't tell yet until we right. get our hands on the game, but...
Yeah.
I definitely think that's a key feature that PlayStation wants to lean into, because they have it, so why wouldn't they
right.
use it?
Yeah, for sure. So getting back to this game, getting back to Ratchet and Clank, how does Rift Apart compare to previous entries in the series?
Like I said at the top, I think it compares in a way that they're fairly similar. This game doesn't necessarily innovate upon the series in drastic ways. Like I said, I think the technical things really separate it
mm-hmm.
in terms of the constantly changing environments through the rifts, the adaptive triggers, the haptic feedback. That makes it feel like a very distinct experience, and visually it's obviously the best looking Ratchet and Clank game. I would even say the best looking PS5 game
mm-hmm.
by far. But it feels like Ratchet and Clank. But I think yeah. that's good, because that's what fans want.
Yeah.
This is the best version of Ratchet and Clank. This is the most polished Ratchet and Clank, and this is Ratchet and Clank pure fun at its best.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it compares favorably in a sense that it's my favorite Ratchet and Clank I've played, but I think each Ratchet and Clank just keeps improving its base gameplay mechanics just to continue keeping their games fun and interesting.
Yeah.
But it's not drastically different than other entries. Like, if you've played a Ratchet and Clank game, you know what you're getting into, and that's mm-hmm. not a bad thing, is mm-hmm. kind of how I would put it.
Awesome. Do you have any last thoughts on Ratchet and Clank?
I think we've kind of touched on everything I wanted to talk about. I think I might have more to say on the story once I finish the game, mm-hmm. but I will say, like, I'm very invested in the characters. I'm very invested in the new characters, especially Rivet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested to see how things play out between her and Ratchet and Clank and where their adventure goes, because I'm really enjoying it so far. Yeah,
awesome. So moving kind of adjacently related, what game would you like to see Insomniac work on next, now that we've seen Ratchet and Clank, we've seen sure. Miles Morales?
That's a fun question, and ultimately I want the studio to make whatever it is they want to make and whatever they're creatively excited about, because mm-hmm. every game, especially lately, Insomniac has just knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Sunset Overdrive, I loved Spider-Man, I loved Miles Morales. Obviously, Spider-Man 2 is in development. We know right. that. So I'm incredibly excited for that. But for the studio behind Rift Apart, it kind of could go either way. I would love to see more Ratchet. I would love to see them go back to Resistance, which was their kind of futuristic World War II mm-hmm. style shooter that they did back on the PS3 generation. I think that could be cool. I've also heard conversations about Naughty Dog licensing out their Jak and Daxter franchise, which is an iconic PS2 platformer.
Mm-hmm.
I think Insomniac could do wonderful things with that if they were interested. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could really see it going either way. I'd be really excited to see Resistance come back, though, just because I think from a technical perspective, now they could really do something interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after Spider-Man, after Rift Apart, they have the chops to write a really compelling story, and I'd love to see what they would do with Resistance game. So that would be
right
my, like, get hype moment, but ultimately I'll be excited about whatever they're working on.
For sure. All right. Do you have any last thoughts for our title track for today?
I don't think so. I definitely recommend going out and checking out Ratchet and Clank. I know it's kind of a steep price tag, but if you have a PS5, I think it's so much fun. Like, I can't understate how much fun I'm having playing this game. Every moment just makes me smile. The dialogue makes me laugh. The graphics are amazing. The gameplay is super tight. And it's just
mm-hmm.
been a really great experience. And I would argue it's my game of the year so far. Awesome. So
that's so cool.
Go play it.
Woohoo. I will keep playing it. We'll see.
I meant the listeners, but also you.
Yes,
everyone,
also me.
Everyone that is interested should definitely check it out, is my pitch.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe it'll end up being my game of the year, too. We'll just, time will tell with that one.
Only time will tell.
It's got some hefty competition, as we've talked about.
There's a lot of good games. A lot of good games right now. A lot to play. A lot coming out.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
It's a good time.
It's a good time, yes.
It is.
All right, shall we move into Question with Claire?
Let's do it. So, this week's question, what game could you spend the whole day playing and not notice the time passing?
Ah, yes. The age-old, my favorite thing to do once a week on my day off.
The age-old, oh shit, it's 10 o'clock and I haven't eaten all day.
Lol. Do you want to go first or you want me to go?
I can go first.
Okay.
So, I have two. These are two games that I actually have played the whole day and not noticed the time passing.
For sure.
Done that. Oh, shit, I haven't eaten and it's been 12 hours kind of thing. So, the first I'll say is Skyrim, because that's the first game that I actually like kind of did that with. I would just sit and play that game for the entire day. Especially, like, in high school, in the summers, like, that was what I did with my time, some days, and it was just so much fun. I remember those days, like, really clearly, because that was, those were really special time.
A pivotal memory.
Yeah, and then more recently, I could while away my whole life playing Subnautica. I get so deep into that game, and now with Below Zero, I have another game to get deep into, too, and I actually did recently spend a whole day off back in late May, who's to say.
I think it came out like the 15th.
Yeah, so it would have been late May. I played the whole day and it was awesome.
Nice.
So those are my two. How about you?
I have a couple. So I have some single player ones, and then I also have a couple multiplayer ones, because I feel like some of the times I've whittled away the most, like the longest marathon sessions, if you will, have been in multiplayer settings with friends where
sense.
We're all having like a LAN party and we're playing together.
Yeah.
Smash Brothers was a big one in college.
Yes. So fun.
You know, somebody's like, hey, we got Smash Brothers. We got extra controllers. Somebody's going to grab a pizza and there's the night. You know what I mean?
Right.
We play for 8 hours or whatever. And those nights were the best.
That was
right around when Smash Bros. Wii U had just come out and seeing it in HD was really great, and our friends had the GameCube adapters. We were playing that, and it was just super, super fun. Growing up, I'd throw out Halo, whether it was Halo Combat Evolved or Halo 2, playing LAN parties with friends, having four controllers hooked up to the console, the split screen experiences. Slayer on Blood Gulch for just hours and hours and hours. Because it was just such a sandbox. You could experiment with different weapons. You could, you know, try out different vehicles and things like that. And then once we got to Halo 3, when they added Forge, where you could literally edit maps and place weapons and spawn vehicles and customize everything to your heart's content.
There goes your day.
I lost probably months of my life to that. And so those are ones that, like, when you're playing with friends, you're laughing, you're one more match. That's ones where I've lost a ton of time. In terms of, like, losing entire days to a game, I think about when I first played Far Cry 3 on the Xbox 360. I'm a sucker for open world games, and if you give me a map with a bunch of outposts to clear out, story missions to do, side quests to complete, collectibles to find, that's the kind of stuff that, like, I'll get lost in that.
Right.
So I think like Assassin's Creed, I think Far Cry, I think Fallout and Elder Scrolls.
Because you can just endlessly play it. You finish a task.
Yeah, and that's
kind
of the point of those games. So that when I saw the when we read the question, that's what came to mind immediately, is that type of game. And that's honestly one of my favorite experiences. Or I think of like Red Dead Redemption, Red Dead Redemption 2, where it's like so realistic and so like deep that there's like a poker simulator that you could lose an hour to, and then you go on a story mission for an hour, and then you get distracted by a bear on the way, so you're doing a hunting side quest, and then you go turn that in, but then you meet a stranger on the way who gives you another mission that you go check out for an hour, and like you just go down this rabbit hole where you're like, right. Oh, that sounds interesting. Oh, that sounds fun. Okay, I'll go do that now. Like, and it just keeps going and going and going. And those are just the best days where...
Yeah, absolutely.
You wake up on a Saturday morning and you're just like, I'm going to check out, keep playing this new game that I'm a couple hours into. And then you just keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Those all sound such fun memories.
Video games are cool, y'all. Yeah. Video games are cool.
They are cool. They bring people together, and then they also bring us closer to ourselves in a way, too.
Indeed.
Indeed.
And on that poignant note, Claire, thank you so much for joining this week, as always.
Super fun. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Listeners, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Some quick housekeeping. Please subscribe to our show on your podcast platform of choice. We are officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. If you enjoy our podcast, consider supporting us at patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive podcasts and more. You can go ahead and follow at lukewarmgames on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show. And tune in for our podcast next week to celebrate our 50th episode spectacular, where Claire and I will be assembling a list of the 50 most influential video games of all time, live on the podcast. You can tweet at us and let us know what game you would like to have included on the list, and we'll include it as part of the discussion.
Yeah, that's going to be super fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
Me too. It'll be great. With that, have a fantastic week, listeners. Cheers, and happy gaming.